So as I was going through some of the things you had written and some of the interviews that you had already done, I kind of felt that you seem to have like a philosophical way of looking at things. Stop me if I'm wrong, but that's what I felt. What are the things you think about on a random Tuesday night?
Yeah, that's today. So I can tell you about
Oh,
what
today's Tuesday, no? Oh shit, I didn't know that. Oh fuck, okay.
And I'm not somebody who dwells a lot in the past, nor in the future though, but I can tell you what I'll do Tuesday afternoon, which is now. And randomly I read Osho's quotes because, like you correctly mentioned, my being is more on the philosophical side, and I like to know the purpose behind our existence, our life. And just randomly, I would go on Instagram, look for quotes that people like Sadhguru or Osho have spoken about, and try to understand their thinking as to why they had such a massive following. What is it that their mind, had, which we as humans don't have in majority? Why were they so different from us? So just questioning the existence is what I do on random days at random times.
So, what do you think is like, what do you think is the purpose of our existence?
Yeah, if I would have found an answer, I wouldn't have been doing that for till now. But as and when I read more, I tend to get deeper into the question. And I think as more and more I read Osho, he just says that don't find purpose in your existence. The fact that you're existing in itself is such a beautiful, phenomenon that you don't need to really get contaminated by what the world is saying. Because in today's world, where so much of civilization has taken place, everybody is in competition, is in race, and they think that everything should have a purpose. And if you don't have purpose, life is meaningless. And that's the reason why so much of depression and stress prevails in our lives. But just being happy, just like a tree is happy being a tree there standing, a flower is happy, flowing in the wind. You also need to be happy just by, just by knowing that you're able to breathe, you're able to live in the present. And I think that just makes me happy every day, irrespective of how the challenges at work are, or at home, or with my friends, or other relationships are.
So Osho, is it fair to say Osho has had like a larger than
Life
larger
impact.
than impact on you?
Yes,
What is it
yes.
what is it about Osho that kind of I've seen the documentary. I am actually you know what, I'm actually more fascinated. I was not very impressed with Osho, but I've been more fascinated by his sidekick. What's her name? I forget her name.
I
But I
remember.
oh you have not watched the have you watched the documentary on Osho, the Wild West, I think.
Yeah, that's the right name. Lots of people have recommended that to me, but I'm not a very big fan of watching stuff than I am for reading, so I
Oh
haven't.
my
But
God,
now that you also tell me, I will have a look at it.
I mean, you're really missing out. I mean, since you're already a huge fan of Osho, you should definitely check it out. And while I watched that documentary, so he had a sidekick by I forget her name, but my God, man! And because I think another documentary was made on her as well, and I think even Karan Johar also had interviewed her. For fuck's sake, I'm not able to remember. I can't remember her name, but very charismatic, and she was the what is that? She was the one who used to do his bidding for him. She was like the very passionate and very. Anyways, I'll send it to you. I'll text you once we're done. But anyways, how did you get into Osho, and why? Like, what kind of impact has he had on you?
Yeah, so I've always been drifted towards people who think differently. Not like there are only a few of them, just that I have come across only a few of them. And one of them being a partner in the law firm that I was working initially. So I haven't done law though. And it so happened that I ended up getting my first job at a law firm, that too through LinkedIn, where I used to write so much. And I remember my first day, he gave me something on privatization of railways that was very commercial. I had never studied finance. I had been through and through a marketing student, and before that, I had done science. So it was very overwhelming for me, and I didn't know what to do about it. And then he said that, don't worry, it's just your first day, don't stress about it. Sit with me in designing the value system of the firm and understand how a firm functions, what cultural values are need to be, you know, integrated into the team members. And through that, he tried to explain me different management concepts and his philosophy of how he follows principles of Buddha and Osho. And those were something that I really resonated with because I had never heard of them before. And the way he would preach it to me, it would have a massive impact on me as if I am just somebody else, you know, when I'm thinking about it. So I just thought that why not start reading more about it. And as I started reading, it actually made me feel that life has more meaning to it than our worries and what we just think we have in, at present. So that is how it all started.
Would you, I feel like, you know, you also seem to have some tendencies of being like, you know, you speak very fluently and all that, and, you know, you don't have that fear. So do you have aspirations of being like a religious guru?
Not right now.
I'm just saying maybe, you know, once you've gained like a decade of a corporate experience and.
Yeah, no, you're actually on the right path because a religious guru has a big influence that not even a politician can have. And I am very much driven towards that power and influence that an individual gains through the popularity that they have through the work they do. So I do definitely want that in my life ever since I was a child. And that dream has been there in me till now. And whatever, you know, work it takes to get me there, I will do. But I haven't thought of being a religious guru. It's a new thing that I'm hearing from somebody.
How would you wield that power and influence? I mean, I'm sure since you've thought about it, how would you go about using it? I mean, in what ways would you like to use it?
Use what? Influence.
Your power and influence.
Yeah, just to again inspire people because I've always had those kind of people around me, be it my peer level or be my seniors. Always they have just motivated me through and through and not by just saying that don't worry, everything will be fine. Not all those generic terms, but by actually telling me stories of their own selves and what they've read of other great leaders from India and abroad. And I think that impact when you have after you hear something inspirational, it's very different. The you know, power I want to use for touching lives and not for, you know, just getting money out of people just because they follow me. Like on LinkedIn also, I have some good following. And whenever somebody tells me that, can you guide me how to write? We will pay you for your time. I'm like, I don't want money for all this. I do it because I love it. And I will teach you because I love doing writing. So I don't ever commercialize something with what I truly love. Because when I start doing that, it will really destroy the whole essence of it and contaminate it, you know, the mind really starts becoming a dangerous master. You know, as beautiful a servant it is, it can also be a dangerous master. So I don't like to commercialize things which give me power.
I'm a little confused actually. So you don't take any content writing assignments at all, is it, for commercial purposes?
No, not really. And my people have told me that, why don't you open a ghostwriting agency and start writing for others? But I never felt like doing it. And unless I feel it's absolutely necessary and it's really impacting someone, I won't take it up. If it's just for the sake of writing on their website or just making it very common, I don't do it. If it really is impacting their profile, their personal branding, and they really feel that there's nobody else but me who can help them, I don't step into it.
Understood. It's very curious. Okay. What are the implications of ChatGPT and generative text technology in general to the area of content writing?
Yeah, I think it's been a very much helpful tool. And, you know, lots of people are using it smartly. It's not like any other tool which will help you in copy pasting, but it actually requires some intelligence from your side also to use it perfectly. For example, if you want to use a particular post, a style of that particular post, and replicate it into a place where you have to write about another topic, it really helps you with that. And it's just like Googling, I feel. If the same thing I Google, I get the answer. It's just that I have to search at 2-3 places to get the right one. At ChatGPT is right there. So I think it's a good thing that has happened to the world.
Do you think it'll be, I personally feel, ChatGPT is like the beginning of the end for content writing per se. Do you feel that way?
No, I don't think so, because I have used it, I won't lie. And every time I use it, I tend to spend one more hour after getting content from there in terms of editing it for my own posts at times. And I don't feel that ChatGPT has that human touch yet. Of course, it can be built over time given how technology is scaling up. But for now, it really needs that emotional touch, and I think only human beings can add to that. But on the philosophical side, it does a really good job. On the commercial aspects, like if you ask them to write about something in real estate, it might not give you a very in-depth piece of it as a 10-year experienced human being in that industry can write and provide it to you. So I think that's the difference where it still lacks.
Understood. I have used both ChatGPT. I've used ChatGPT, but I think yesterday or today, Google also released their competitive product called Bard. Yeah. I'm really excited to use that. I've been completely, my mind has been completely blown by ChatGPT. Completely. Like, I mean, not only with the way, not only with the information that it gives, but also the way it structures the sentences and the nuance that it kind of provides, right? Like, really, I was completely mind blown. I'm really waiting where this is going, you know. I'm just waiting for these advances to kind of take place. When you do these business writing, right? Like, I think I came across your Haldiram story, and I think there was a Zoom story as well. I think you did on the founder. How do you, like, what is your... So first of all, how do you go about selecting like which story to cover? How does that process work?
Yeah, lots of people till date tell me that why don't you plan your content calendar and schedule your posts? But it's just not something that comes to my mind, because I do it out of sheer excitement and love every day. So I start my day with random reading, which also includes newspapers. And if I find something interesting, I just pick it up and I feel like, okay, this is going to be my post for the day. Like it happened yesterday. I was just randomly reading about family offices because I wanted to, deliver a piece in my workspace on that. And I came across a beautiful infographic on Google about it. And I said that, okay, this is going to be my post for today. So I think my work in the present day helps me figure out what I will post in the night. And most of my posts, if you see, they are post 8 p.m. or 9 p.m. in the evening. So whatever cumulatively I do in the day, it's a part of it that comes out in my post. So if you see something about Haldiram's, assume that I might have read about it today, that's how it is.
So let's take Haldiram as example. So once you select Haldiram, what happens next? I mean, it's clear that, so let's say today you opened up, I don't know, New York Times or whatever newspaper that you read. And once you picked it up, you found Haldiram's and you realize Haldiram is a good story to write. What happens next? I mean, do you go to Wikipedia to get more details? And I'm sure you'll have to edit in the parts that, I mean, you have to make it fun for the reader, right? So you'll have to only select the juicy parts out, and that part also has to be done. So what goes on from that conception of, iska post banana, I mean, we have to do something about Haldiram, to the final edit of the article, so on so.
Yeah, so like Google comes handy for each and everything, right? From a 5-year-old kid to a 50-year-old CEO, it's the same platform, Google, that we use for anything that we would want to search. So there's no special dictionary of sorts where you can find such stories, but random Google helps you gain certain knowledge about the stories. Like Haldiram is a very famous one, so you'll get 10 more pages talking about the same story. But how do you really present it in a very crisp way and present it in a very attractive way such that your users would want to read a story. Because if you see an article, it looks very boring because anyways, it's paraphrased and in such longer sentences that people feel very tired and the attention span is just getting shorter and shorter day by day. So I just collate information from each and everywhere, wherever I click on the link, and I just put it in a Word document. And I then, separate the weed from the important parts, just like how you make the land fertile, right, for a plant to grow. I do that in that crowded space. And I actually take 3 hours to write a post. Every time I think I will finish my post in 1 hour and it doesn't happen. It takes a lot of time in editing than it takes to collate information and just write it down. Because I edit at least 4 to 5 times after I have written. And every time I read, I feel it can be done better and better. And now you might think that how does an end point really come where I think that, okay, it is good enough to get posted. It just, I feel that I put a full stop to my checking process, because if I keep reviewing again and again, there will not be a time that I will post it. So I just review it 5 to 7 times max and then put it out in the way it has been drafted. But yeah, it's a very lengthy process.
The 3 hours you mentioned is only for the editing, is it? And how many hours?
3 hours in total.
The research and the edit, yeah. And the... Not bad, man. Definitely not bad. I thought, yeah, I think three hours is pretty decent, right? What do you say?
Yeah.
I was expecting, I think I was expecting... some 20 hours or some shit like that. I don't know. Anyways.
20 hours.
I have no idea about how much time it takes. So, I'm very naive when it comes to that. So,
okay.
Right. What's your schedule like? I mean, you mentioned early you do some random reading. What time do you wake up?
So I usually come to the office by 8:30 a.m. every day. So I wake up around 7 o'clock. And that's how I start my day. I don't do anything in the morning. I just sit in silence. I observe. I don't use my phone until I'm in the car for my office. And once I reach here, it's the newspapers I start with and some philosophical reading just to keep my mind activated and energized for the day.
What is that reading? What is philosophical reading?
Like I told you about Osho's quotes, right? I do random Instagram scrolling. Yeah, I can't sit and read a book because I'm very impatient that way. So I just like to read short snippets and crisp quotes of these leaders. And I schedule most of my meetings in the first half so that I don't feel sleepy at all, even if I've had a long night the day before.
I know you requested me for a early meeting as well. I'm so sorry. I wake up pretty late, so that's why we had to do this second half. Yeah.
Yeah. No problem. But second half for me, anyways, starts from 3 o'clock because my day goes up till 10, 11 in the night, so it doesn't matter as much. I usually after my meetings, I do the lunch with my team. And after that, I work on the strategizing part of how we would want to grow the firm, what other team members are doing. For me, their personal growth is also very important, because if they are just working in the firm and if they don't like their job, they will just be like a slave and they won't be the kings and the queens. And I want them to be the, faces of every vertical that they head. For example, if somebody is heading business development, I want to make sure that they become the best one in this field that we are, right, in women entrepreneurship. So I make sure that they develop themselves along with being the best at what they do. And I sit with my team both in the morning and in the evening to start my day by setting out the agenda and end my day by summarizing what happened, what progress have we made, where are we heading, so that everybody is aligned. Because the beauty and the challenge of also working in a small team is that you have to communicate a lot, because even if one person goes in a silo, which is like if they feel separated or alone, it really starts to have that domino effect and everybody feels that negative energy around, and starts to get demotivated. So I make sure that my team is equally energized as me. And they treat the business as it's their own, just like I do it. So that part of the day goes into it. And yeah, I spend the later part of the evening, which is after 7 o'clock, in drafting my post. So around 9:30, 10 is when I put it up. So 7 to 10 is when I strategize and write my post. And after 10 o'clock, I sometimes scroll on LinkedIn, see what other people's are talking, other people are talking about, what's been trending, what's new on Shark Tank. I don't really have the patience again to watch the 1 hour episode, so I just see the summary. But yeah, that's how I end the day and sleep around 12, 12:30.
Ah, 12, 12:30. So you sleep, yeah. Only six and a half, 7 hours.
Yeah, 7 hours on an average.
7 hours, I think, is not bad. I sleep eight. I sleep more than eight, man. I'm so sorry. But I don't know. But I'm not running a company. So six, I feel, is too less. I've said this many times, multiple times. Six, I feel, six and a half. Seven, I think, is fine, I think. Yeah, I think you're...
Yeah, 7 to 9 hours is the best sleep cycle to have.
I feel nobody knows anything about sleep. I mean, I discard everything, every info, like every post and every video about sleep. I just discard it because I truly feel nobody knows anything about sleep, because one person tells you one thing, the other person will tell you complete food and diet, right? Like, nobody has a clue. I mean, there are some guidelines you can follow, and but rest everyone, it's everyone has their own opinion. And
No, they speak for themselves, and because they're putting it out on social media, sabko lagta hai it's for them. But that's not true. So it's our fault, not their fault, that we are thinking ki they're telling us gyan. It's up to us whether to take it or no. So just take it as an advice and do ultimately whatever you think is right. And that becomes the right ingredient.
Right. Understood. Okay. Why do you think women representation in the workforce, especially at the executive level, is so low?
This topic has been talked about a lot, especially in my interviews. I ask these questions to a lot of senior executives, and they say that some women are just insecure, and that stems naturally because they are anyways very few in number at the top, and they think that if they send the lift down and elevate somebody up, they will become smarter and outshine them and take their position, because anyways it's a competitive world, right? And that in itself doesn't let them mentor young other women who are in their own firm, working in their own team. And I've seen that happen in real in some of the law firms, because not in the law firm I worked. It is very different culturally, but it's very important.
That is a good save.
But because I work there, I have seen people in other law firms. A junior would come to ask them a question, they would just disregard it. They would just say that, why are you even asking this? Just do as I say. And because that happens, by nature, you have this feminine quality of being more humble and more compassionate. And that's not between a man versus a woman. A man can also have those feminine qualities. But whosoever has that feminine qualities, females being the majority, they just feel very much hurt that, okay, somebody has told me this, I don't think so, I'm meant to be here. And that's what we call as an imposter syndrome, thinking that it's because of me that the external situation is arising and not because of the other person, putting the blame on yourself. That really happens with a lot of females, and that's one of the reasons why not many can make it to the top. And those who have made it have said it openly, that they call themselves an outlier. And they say that we know that others are not like us, and we had to be more aggressive to take our position and to dominate to the top, to make it there. And females naturally don't have those qualities, but those can be built, in time. But there should be more leaders who are more compassionate, have more empathy to lift those other women up and answer every queries that they have. So I think this in total
I just want to stop. So one question, clarification is, so generally I got the sense that, you have to be a little aggressive to go on the top, because there is of competitive dynamics, you have to be aggressive. But also, you mentioned how at the top, you have to be empathetic so that people at the who are below them can you know, maybe rise to the top. So how should we negotiate that, you know, being aggressive on the top, but also, oh my God, what am I saying? You know, being aggressive, but also being empathetic. Yeah, you know.
So here's where the question of balance comes in. And that's why we are doing this whole thing also. You know, people are saying that you need to be aggressive to take your position, but that's not true. If you anyways will have more leaders at the top, they will not demand aggression from you. Most of the leaders today are men who are like that and who expect that aggression out of their people. And if they don't see that, they don't promote them. And if we have more women leaders, on the other hand, who are more empathetic and have compassion, they will understand that aggression is not the only way to reach where you want to be. There can be other ways also. Merit is one of them. And just in a conference room, I was sitting, and the same thing a woman had told, nobody heard, but this other man in the room said it, and everybody was like, okay, yeah, good point. And she was like, dude, I just said the same thing. So it's just a subconscious mentality that we need to change, and it will change over time when we see more and more women participating.
I mean, I'm really sorry, but in that example you mentioned, I don't think, I mean, that cannot be subconscious, right? Because, I mean, she voiced it. So once it's voiced, it's, I mean, subconscious is, what is that? That was like a blatant disregard of somebody's opinion, right?
Yeah, but they don't do it intentionally. I mean, you wouldn't want to hurt a woman like that, right? Just because she's a woman. It just happens because in your mind, you've been conditioned to think that, okay, wo bol rahi hai to aise hi bol rahi hogi. It doesn't hold any weight.
Really? Is it that bad, is it?
Yeah. It's very bad in the corporate world, but it's getting better.
Okay, because the incident you mentioned, that's right out of a Seinfeld episode. I mean, that's something something that would happen in the movies. But also, this may also prove my ignorance and not knowing anything about the corporate world. So it can go both ways. Anyways.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Why are networks for women so important? Are they important?
Yeah, it's very much important because I've been a part of many. I'm going to one of them today. And I see the way they openly communicate and don't hesitate to ask. It's very different from a network where even men are there. Because a woman just opens up naturally to another woman, seeing that, okay, this person is like me. She has the same biological characters as me, and she can understand where I'm coming from. The same won't be expected when a man would be standing in front of her. Of course, this goes off with age and experience, but I'm talking about the mid-career women. I'm, of course, not talking about the executive level. There is no difference at all. Only
what is
merit
a mid-career woman?
Senior women as in 40 and above who have, you know, reached to the position of a CXO level.
I'm so sorry. What is CXO?
CXO meaning chief. You have chief executive officers, chief strategy officer, chief technology officer. So that middle part is replaceable, right? The chief and the officer remains the same. And the middle part is X, right? CXO. And that X can be technology, strategy, design, executive.
Understood.
Yeah. So I just lost my chain of thought.
I was we were talking, you were talking about networks. You were going for an event and
So it doesn't happen at that level of CXOs, more so because they know how they have reached there and they don't really need to prove themselves. But you know, the point of proving only comes when you have surpassed your stage of being a fresher, when you're already 4 or 5 years into the industry, and now you know that to get promoted, you have to act and behave in a certain way because that's how it's been for years and years. And they just feel that if they talk to more women, they will get more advice and they can share ideas openly. And they just feel that they would be judged and they would be perceived as being stupid if they ask any questions. Even if it is a smart question, they would think that to themselves because they've seen the world in this way where only men have led, only men have decided how it should be, how the company should run. all of those things, you know. So it might sound very illusional, as it sounded to me also a few years back when I was in my college. But now that I am in this industry and I've seen it happen in front of my eyes, I can vouch for it that it really happens and it's a bad place to be in. But networks for women really help, because you see the stories of other women, right? How they have reached to the top, how they can... And these networks also, you know, provide young women the career guidance as to how they should lead their way up. And the women who come as speakers, they're usually very helpful. They like to mentor you. There wouldn't be someone who are insecure or who wouldn't want you to grow. So I think that growth ecosystem is really helpful for women.
Do you get tired of networking?
No, I love it. And that's why I am into it. If I would have gotten tired, I would have left it. I'm not someone who would stick to something if I don't like it. I left my first job within just a month's time, even if it was paying well. And it was after my college. And everybody said that, have you gone mad? Why are you doing this? It's your job security. It's your first job. Who does it? And that was right in the middle of the pandemic, where anyways people were not getting jobs, layoffs were happening, and college placements were anyways not helping. So, but I did it, and I sat at home jobless. I said that it's fine. You don't need external validation to do something. I was anyways writing on my LinkedIn before college, and I just focused on that because I knew that if I focus on something, it will give me results sometime or later. And I just focus on giving my 100% into the input, and I stay patient for the output, because if I stay impatient for the output, I will face disappointments at every stage of my life, and I won't be able to do things perfectly or in a better way as I could otherwise in the present. So yeah, that's what it happened. And yeah, that's the answer to your question, basically. Yeah.
You should really reconsider being a religious guru. I mean, you should consider, not reconsider. Yeah, you should consider. Anyways. How was your, we've spoken about, problems for women and some of the challenges that they might face. How was your transition from college to workforce?
Oh, the transition was very good. In fact, the transition from high school to college was very difficult for me, because I found it hard to adjust in those groups where you had to pretend a little bit to be into a particular group, which was known to be very smart, vibrant, and the one who would organize every fest in your college, you know. And by nature, I'm a very curious person, so I would want to be a part of every committee that was present in my college. But my peers didn't like it. They would think that she has so much of time that she's present everywhere. And that's how I just lost all of my friends, because they would just waste or invest their time in building their own friendships, going out with their own group of friends only, and just hanging out with that particular set of folks. But I always loved meeting new people, hearing new perspectives. So I would do that every day in my college. But I mean, it was a very lonely journey for me in my college. But I think that has helped me a lot.
By college, you mean 11th and 12th, or you're talking about
graduation.
You're talking undergraduation.
Yeah.
Understood. Because I mean, you mentioned the transition from high school to college, right? So I thought it was 11th and 12th.
No, so after high school to the first and second year of my college, that transition.
Yeah, now I'm completely confused. I think partly because I think in Karnataka, where I'm from, we have high school is 8th, 9th, 10th, and then we have 11th and 12th.
Okay. And high school is 11th and 12th.
Oh, your high school is 11th and 12th,
isn't it? Yeah.
Understood. So my high school in Karnataka, it means 8th, 9th and 10th is high school. And then 11th and 12th is called pre-university college. So that's called PUC, widely known as PUC in Karnataka and Bangalore. And your college, what they say as college is, your UG. Undergraduation is called college. Understood.
Yeah, now I know your reason of confusion.
Yeah. I'm confused most of the times in life, actually. So,
confusion is the highest state of intelligence. Only those who think they know are really shutting themselves to the world.
Right. I wish you were always there. Anyways, I don't want to crack too many jokes. Can you how did you cope with the loneliness in college then?
Yeah, so I was very fortunate to be a part of the entrepreneurship cell of my college then in the second year. And again, that was a difficult phase because people are strangers to you. You are strangers to them. To establish trust and, friendship amongst you becomes difficult. But I had this attitude of never giving up. And I just made one of my friends my mentor because he was so intelligent. And he was just like another spiritual guru, I would say, the way he would speak, like I am speaking now. And I was very much attracted to his intelligence. And I just said that, please guide me. Everything is good in life except for this social circle. And he said that, why are you really worried about it? If you don't find happiness in college, why don't you join an internship and find friends there? Make friends with your colleagues, learn from them. Because the world is so big, why are you restricting yourself only to college people? And that's how I actually started doing internships. And it really opened up my mind. I did my internships with a life sciences company, where I organized a doctor's event for them. Then I did it for an educational company, which was a startup. I headed sales there. Then I actually interned at a finance firm where I was researching on different stocks. So I had a taste of all, and it really opened up my mind. And I'm very thankful to him for suggesting me to take these up. And that's how I really fought my loneliness. And I think that loneliness gave me depth and meaning to life. Otherwise, everything on the surface looks glitzy and glamour. And it's only the sadness sometimes that makes you explore the real juice of life and what it is. And I used to feel very terrible, rather, in my own company when I was in my college. But now I really enjoy it because it gives me space and time to think, to contemplate and to plan what I have for my next years or what I have today. So that's how I did it. And I think it's very important to surround yourself with the right kind of people, be it of the same age group or otherwise. If you don't have mentors, it can really break you or make you, it at least in your initial years of career, because you're anyways young and your mind is here and there, scattered everywhere. It needs to come into a particular fashion to make you reach somewhere. Otherwise, it's just a ladder of freedom. You know, some people choose to travel the other end, and it takes them to a very bad position, whereas others take the same ladder to go to a beautiful place and make a good life for themselves. So you need somebody to tell you that how you should climb up that ladder, because you're very young to know it by yourself.
You know, I love the ladder example, not because you gave it, but I don't know if you, do you watch Game of Thrones? Have you watched Game of Thrones?
No, I told you I don't watch stuff a lot.
Oh my God. I mean, every reference you're giving me, I have an ears. So Game of Thrones, which is one of my favorite TV shows ever, Game of Thrones has a very amazing ladder analogy, but it's a different, so there they give the analogy of, they talk about chaos. They talk about chaos as a ladder. And this analogy is given by Littlefinger. I'll send you the YouTube link if you want. If you care enough, you can watch it. But so Littlefinger is one of the advisors, one of the characters in Game of Thrones, and he talks about chaos being a ladder, and you use that ladder to, you know, get ahead in life. I'm doing terrible injustice to the way I'm saying it. It's a beautiful scene.
I will. Please send it to me.
Sure, sure.
I hope it's a short clip.
Oh my God! I'll send it to you. You can decide if it's short enough for you. Are you less lonely today?
Yeah, I am. Like I told you, I have enjoyed my company as well, whether I'm alone or if I'm with somebody else. I go to movies alone. I go for my dinners alone most of the times, and I just love it because it gives me space to also talk to other people who are there around. And I've made so many good friends out of it, be it at my level or people much elder to me who are doing great in their lives. So I don't feel that I'm lonely now, and the definition has totally changed completely. I would think that being alone is being lonely before, but now I don't think it that way.
I'm going to polish this a little bit. I want to push this thought a little further. And I think this question might be a little offensive as well. But anyways, do you worry that life is just going to be one achievement after the other? And in the end, there might be a risk of looking back and, questioning what was it all for?
I mean, that happens in every case. And that's what makes life a life. If it was a very smooth sail, you wouldn't enjoy it. Rather, I don't know if you've done water sports, you enjoy the thrill of it because you haven't. You should. You do it because you have waves in the sea or the ocean, and you just love how you're just going up and down, and you're just feeling the thrill of it. So I think there are so many decisions that I look back and think that, why did I not do it this way, or why did I not start up early when I had so many ideas back then also. But I think everything has its own timing, and we should respect some forces of nature also, and not try to always dominate our will and wish in the universe. I am a very big believer of karma, and as you might have known by now already, hearing how I'm speaking, but I think it's just a race, and it's never ending. And that's why people say that death is the only salvation that you get. It's the only celebration that you should celebrate, that it's the end of a suffering. Some people actually call life a suffering in the sense that they have to always keep working for it. There's never an end goal. There's always a new beginning after an end. So I think that happens. It's very natural. And I've faced it too in my life. If something ends, I'm happy about it because I know something better is coming. Of course, in the moment, you try to feel that, why did it happen to me? Why did it happen now? But after that, you try to recover from it more after having developed that immunity to fight against bad times.
I think the whole Buddhist philosophy itself is starts with life is suffering. No? I think that's the... I'm not even kidding. I'm serious. I think that's the my understanding is, I think after Buddha meditated, I don't know for how long, but for however long he meditated, after that, when I think that was his realization that life is suffering, and I think then he went on to teach how to mitigate or how to minimize that suffering. I don't know much about Buddhism, but that's what I've heard. What is radically yours?
So it's about, connecting the early stage founders with investors globally, and especially women entrepreneurs, because it's all about fostering women entrepreneurship, given the challenges that they face while fundraising also. I'll just give you a statistics to put this in perspective. Only like 2% of the whole money that we call as venture capital was given to women-founded businesses in the US last year. And the rest of the 98% went to male entrepreneurs. So why is it that? Because the numbers also show that women-founded businesses are more profitable and are more impact-driven. Yet VCs, which are the money providers, they get drifted towards big scale. And even if a company is burning cash, even if they're running in losses, they would want to fund those companies. So I think...
Do you have numbers on what proportion of men and women also start businesses?
So 60 to 40. Lots of women have their own businesses, not at a bigger scale, because like I said, they're driven more towards impact than making it $1 billion or $1 million business. But there are lots of women who have founded their own business, and it's 60-40.
So one more thing I'm curious about is you mentioned impact, but not scaling the business. Forget the gender question. I mean, this is not a gender question. I mean, in general, do you think people can have impact without scaling? I don't think it's possible.
Yeah, it is of course possible. By scaling, I mean that scaling at the cost of impact. And lots of companies do that. And impact just doesn't mean your environmental or social impact. It also means impact on your books of accounts. You can't scale at the cost of your profits. You can't be having losses through and through and still having money in your company to grow at any cost. So many companies have shut down because of that. And it gives you so much stress as a human, you know, that what kind of company am I running? Will I be able to pay off my debts? And by impact, I mean that.
But again, but as you say, but what you just said, I think Amazon, Facebook, Twitter is not profitable, but I think Twitter is also running the same business model. Other tech companies, like even ByteDance, TikTok, that's their business model, right? I mean, they burn today in the hope that Uber, for example, or any, you can take Indian startups as well, Zomato, Ola. I mean, their whole business model has been what you just described as burning money today and in the hope of reaping rewards tomorrow. You don't find that very convincing, is it?
No, it is, but it comes at the cost of many things. And you can see their interviews. They have spoken about it, how much they have felt the investor pressure to grow and scale. But if you also see that the names you have mentioned of the companies, they are all led by men. You don't have women founders on those, you know, companies. And that's why I think that there is a market also to fund those women-led companies which don't scale it at a level, as you mentioned, but still are running happily and profitably in their own way. But there are no money providers for them as such. So how do we open up a source of funding for them and, you know, support them in a way that they can also grow in a way that they would want and not in the way of other money providers who want them to grow?
Understood. One thing, so are you running directly yours full time, or are you working at that law firm and then running this part time?
No, so like I said, I was working earlier there, but after that I discontinued and I'm working full time for my own startup. I mean, startup is a full time journey. I don't think so there's anything part time in it.
Understood. Theka. I want to ask you two case studies. I think just your thoughts on two of the things that I thought interesting. You did a post on FTX failure, on corporate failure.
Yeah.
What did you make of that whole episode, the way it kind of crumbled? Any thoughts in general about FTX?
Yeah, I don't like to speak about all these scandals or to make a brouhaha out of it, because it's just like you're giving opinions out of it. Even when you're not a part of it, you know, I'm not a part of the company. Neither I was a shareholder, nor am I an investor or related to there any of investors. So I don't like to comment on it. And that video was also done because we like to put out the news as to what has happened in the startup ecosystem. And as a matter of that fact, we have put it out without talking about our personal opinions, you know, that what is the scandal about? What could have happened? What is happening now? What's the impact? We don't like to get into all those things.
Understood.
It was my phone, yeah.
No, I figured. Apple has this annoying habit of connecting the phone to the laptop. I disabled it 2 days back. Yeah, I feel you. Yeah. Second case study. You did a story on Rise of Gautam Adani as well.
Yeah. I mean, it's the same answer I would give, because we just know like 1% of the whole 99% of other problems that they're facing. And I'm not somebody who's written that Hindenburg's research report. So I can't really tell you that what's going right and what's going wrong in Adani Enterprises.
Right. I was pretty shocked with the... with both FTX and, but for me, the biggest biggest bomb was the Hindenburg report. I mean, going, one thing which really kind of hit me was it took a US-based research firm to, you know, get something out like the Hindenburg report. And, you know, it was not like a revelation or like a report from let's say, the Times of India or, I don't know, man, Times Now or NDTV, let's say.
Why? That will never be the case. Adani is like the richest in India and he controls so many people. NDTV se to expect bhi mat karna because...
journalists, so many news agencies, but it took a private... I think it was a private... they're not doing it for the public good per se. I mean, Hindenburg Report is, I think, it's a short seller. I mean, it's a trading firm, if I'm not wrong.
It's their work to do this. They do it for most of the companies, and they picked up Adani because apparently he was one of the world's richest, and that's how his name came. Nothing against India, I would say. But that's their work, and the journalists here in India, it's not their work to write on the tycoons of India. They would be fired if they do that. So, I mean, you know what has happened with Karan Thapar, who tried to, interview Narendra Modi and tried to cross-question him.
Really? I don't know. What happened?
Yeah. You should watch that interview. He just asked him something on Gujarat elections. Where
right. I haven't watched the Karan Thapar interview, but I was watching YouTube shorts, I think. And you know the documentary that got banned, right? What is that? Modi something, man. I don't know. BBC documentary on Modi, which was banned a couple of weeks back. So that was trending on YouTube shorts. And it was the interviewer was asking him about the Gujarat riots. And he was pissed off, man. He was pissed off. So, the Hindenburg Report or something, man. And they were at it for 2 years. I mean, so they started the research in 21. So I was really impressed with that whole report, man. I think Adani has faced over $65 billion in market cap. I think, I don't know, $60 to $70 billion in market cap. They had to cancel the FPO. I mean, talk about one report, one report which destroys a company, man. It's really crazy. It's been more than a month since the new year. Did you make any new year resolutions? And if so, have you managed to keep them?
No, I think, firstly, I don't fundamentally believe in the idea of new year's. It's just very extremist and something that makes you very excited. And it takes you out of the real day that you're living in again. And I just feel that every day is a new day where you have new chances and opportunities. For me, it was just a date change. I didn't even celebrate New Year's. I've never believed in New Year's. Yeah, I don't.
Bro, that is just sad, man. Come on. I mean,
no, I don't celebrate all of those. I mean, I don't like party and all, but of course, I went for dinner with my family. And it's like a get-together occasion, right? These occasions just give you a chance to meet your friends, family, come together, have a nice meal, watch something. So that of course, happened. Everybody was happy. But it wasn't like, okay, New Year is there, so kuch alag karna hai, is saal mein kuch alag karna hai, aisa nahi hai. I know what I'm doing and why I'm doing. I'm very much self-aware that way. And if I have to do something, I will do something now. I don't have to wait for the new year or Jan 1st to come up and set some resolutions. If mujhe aaj kuch karna hai, toh I'll do it, right? I won't like wait for kuch particular occasion aega and then I'll do it.
I don't know, man. I'm not very convinced. I mean, I think even if a person is self-aware, I think days like those or junctures, days like those in general, I think they're a good time to kind of reevaluate just to reflect back a little bit and, just see how things have gone. And I think it's also, everybody's also doing some reevaluation. So you also get to, participate, have those discussions. And if not very seriously, but at least for the fun of it, just to understand, what is somebody's priority. Like a lot of my friends had... losing weight as a big priority, so most of them wanted to lose weight, some of them wanted to get into reading. So my resolution was to read one book per week, but I couldn't even finish the first week, so I already failed at the get-go.
I actually reevaluate everything every day, so there was nothing new for me. But if I have to talk about it khud se, matlab, I wouldn't say social media pe jaake ki, okay, this is my New Year resolution because I don't set it up. But if somebody is really asking me and if we are having a conversation in a group, then I would just say that doing what I'm doing in a better way and in a much larger way that I can have more impact. बस इतना कुछ एक्साइटिंग आंसर नहीं है मेरे पास इसके लिए कि आई हैव टू लूज वेट, आई हैव टू मेक माय हेयर लुक शाइनी और आई हैव टू ट्रैवल अब्रॉड, ऐसा कुछ नहीं है.
अंडरस्टूड. ऑन दैट नोट, मिस राधिका, थैंक यू सो मच फॉर टेकिंग द टाइम. इट वाज वंडरफुल हैविंग यू. थैंक यू सो मच.